Blog Talk Radio.
3 minute warning.
DFL, baby!
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude. Go, go, go! Be a bit. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
Never more popcorn.
You know what being down by 20 at halftime means? Sweet, diddly, jack, squat. Why? Because you can storm back. I know it, you know it, they don't. Tucked into their little beds tonight, they don't want to be haunted by you crossing that goal line. Well, it's time to give them a nightmare. And cross it.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Candid Frank, the CFL is the best football in the world show. I'm Frank, the true double blue Argo lifer Stanishi and the host of the show. Please welcome our co-hosts and friends of the show, Mike, the CFL is the best football in the world Townsend and future owner. Manasseh, harder to find than Waldo Giver Medine. Christopher, let's talk CFL and Lions Den Jones. Kelly, CFL know-it-all Bale. Bruce, the 13th man John Inch. Aaron, enough with the posting Macintosh. Gary, is it rock season yet, Groob? Stevie, the what else can I buy in Argo colors Richardson. Rob, the pistol J. Emery. Storm takes no Schmidt. Bill and Liam, the world travelers and how. Surge, the CFL season ticket hoarder and collector, Duvidien. Derek, the bomber boot, Christopher. Kevin, Cheryl, and Cuddly Clan Kingsley. Kim, watch out, boys, Weaver. Debbie Riders, rule regardless, Wormsbecker. Donna, I will admin ya, Gale. Aaron, William, the meathead Freeland. Jarrett, the roadie, and Box J Boy Harris. Leanne, Leafs girl, what am I doing here, hockey? Steve, rock and roll Myers. Mike, Keeble Cable Cancellera. Reddit, retweet the show CFL every time. Aaron Russell, the organizer Nagy. Doug, look at the big lens and say cheese Lewis. Joe, I'm like a to listen to the show Sardella. Danny E, likes caring for elderly. Salonen. Spike, I will nail you Sutherland. Andrew, the graphic illustrator Crump. Frank, the mascot Kirby. Tony, I wish I could agree with you Frank Dejeuner. Becca, I will deadlift you Veludo. Tangerine, I have a dream Queen. Annette and Paul, that's my beautiful son, Jason Pottinger. And finally, Randy, Captain Video Christinger.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders, and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
We're the Argo Cheerleaders,
and you're listening to the Candid Frank Live Show.
Yay!
Woo. Go Frank!
Go Frank! Go Frank!
Go Frank!
If you insist, I will go. It's raining here in Cowtown. Well, we're next door to Cowtown. We're Mr. and Mrs. Saga, or as some people call it, Mrs. Sausage. It's raining here a lot. It is raining. It is raining, raining, raining. And the East has a challenge to reign for first place. But first, let's talk about the... Tonight we're going to talk about, of course, the games coming up. Our first game will be the Montreal Alouettes, who are in Edmonton against the Eskimos, starting it all up on Friday at 9 p.m. on one of the five channels on TSN. I'll leave that part for you to figure out. Well, the Al's defense has a partner in the offense now. After back-to-back wins, they now must be considered the favorite in the East. Yes, you heard it from an Argo fan saying that, but, you know, this is the news part of the program where my prejudice needs to be set aside. But it won't be for long. See, I couldn't hold my prejudice for long either. No team in the East has more balance than the Owls. Their defense has been fantastic all year. And finally, they got an offense going. Their running game even goes beyond Whitaker. The receivers, even Ocho Cinco, are making catches. And the reliable quarterback, Jonathan Crompton, with a heavy heart, led his team to a victory. And not alone, last year's quarterback hero, Marsh, the phenom earlier in the season, won a few key games for the Owls last year, if you remember that season, one that was very forgettable for Owls fans, was over the center for some key situations in that victory against Hamilton. Now, their opponent in Edmonton, Luka Kanji, has recently signed, and he'll be busy for the balance of the season because it proves that, he's going to be needed since kicker Grant Shaw is out after season-ending surgery. The former Ticat has been trying to stick with the team, and this may be his best chance in Edmonton. Yeah, he's been around a little bit. The next game that'll be played will be Toronto, who will be traveling to Calgary. And they will be playing the Stampeders, the team they beat in the Grey Cup a couple of years ago. That's right, Schmitty. They beat the Stamps in the 2012 Grey Cup. The 100th Grey Cup. Last year, they went into Calgary, and Caleros did a great job in beating the Stamps. He sure did. And, of course, this year the Stamps are the elite of the elite, having lost only one game, which is almost the reversal of the CFL Eastern teams. Defensive back Alex Suber joins the Argos after the failed experiment with D-back Dwight Anderson. The Argos now are off, after being off for a week, are there in the lead in the standings, but both the Owls and the Ticats are more than within reach, and in fact, you'll hear it here first, and I think the Owls will overtake the Argos, and the question will be how quickly the Argos can overcome the dire need of that guy Braley, who I'm starting to dislike, selling the team. Yes, Mr. Braley, I'm beginning to dislike you. Why am I disliking you? Because it seems to me, after at least garnering a lot of respect from a lot of people in the football world, especially the CFL world, and especially those of us in Toronto that wish to keep the Argos here, after starting out as more or less a savior of the team, now you're holding back their opportunity to succeed. Now, I understand it's hardball, MLSE, you want $10 million and you want a percentage of the next Grey Cup. God knows what percentage that is. I don't. And now there have been other suitors that have come and who have walked away from the table because, quite frankly, Mr. Braley, you're asking too much. Dude, you got lots of money. Let's get the Argos into a practice facility that week in, week out is theirs. Let's get them into treatment for injuries in a better environment, because the environment they're in right now is not conducive to recovering from injuries. And the team spends too much time traveling at the last minute. So let's get her done, Mr. Braley. Sell the team. It doesn't have to be MLSE. It can be anyone. Sorry. This Argo fan is just getting very, very frustrated with the turn of events. 3 years this team has not had a steady practice facility. We've heard Ticat fans talk about what a tough year it's been. We haven't had a place to practice. Well, it's been 3 years for the Argos. In fact, the first year, 2012, where they were having this difficulty, when the season after their practice facility burnt down, they used it as a rallying cry to basically help motivate them to go eventually and win the Grey Cup. Well, anyway, they're going to Calgary, the team they beat in that full circle here. And, I love what Calgary's doing. I'm telling you. I picked this team to be the team in the tough spot, maybe the crossover team coming out of the West into the East. That's how I felt they'd get into the playoffs. But right now, they're establishing quite clearly that they will be in the playoffs shortly. In fact, if they were in the tough Western Division, they'd have clinched by now. They would have clinched a couple of weeks ago if they're in the Eastern Division. So Mark A. McDaniel has been, incredible. He has been incredible. And I'm really pleased with the job he's done. One of these players that you trade for, and then the first couple of years you have, he's okay. He's okay, but this has been a breakout year for M&M. And he's done a great job. And the distribution of the ball by Bo Levi Mitchell, you can't lose sight of that. He has done it without big comebacks like other quarterbacks this year, big numbers like other quarterbacks this year. All he's done is win while over the center. The next game will be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers that will be going further west to British Columbia, and they'll be playing the Lions in Vancouver. The most important thing that can be said about Winnipeg this week, I think, is that they're not playing the Riders for a change. Now, that may not be a good thing, because BC, after barely beating Ottawa, and let's be clear about this, they were embarrassed. 7-5 was the score in Week 11 against Ottawa, and it had to be described as a lackluster effort, and this is a team with a lot of pride. I'm sure Christopher Jones has been on the phone berating them for... No, he wouldn't berate them. He's a total supporter of his team. In British Columbia, of course... Lule will be missed. The question is, how much will he be missed? Well, we all know that Kevin Glenn, he did perform well, keeping Lule's spot under center warm. He did achieve the 500, which most fans in BC, including Christopher Jones, wanted to see from him until Lule came back. And now he understands and knows what he's got in a team, in an offense in BC. So that 500 can very easily become a plus. And we'll just find out, you know, whether he can do it. Bring the BC Lions to the promised land, which is the playoffs, which end, of course, in BC. Quite clearly, Kevin Glenn has now found himself in the total reversal of situation. He went to Ottawa as their draft pick. He was going to be the guy there. He was the guy. And then they signed Burris. And then he wasn't happy. And then he ended up in BC and was happy to be a backup. And now he backs into being the starter. So how's that for karma? Kevin Glenn deserved some good karma, and it has come to him. Now, will he lead his team to the playoffs and the Grey Cup? Well, his BC fans sure hope so. Our final game of the week will be the Saskatchewan Rough Riders visiting their victims in the Grey Cup last year, the Hamilton Tiger Cats in Hamilton. Right now, as bad as Hamilton played in the Grey Cup, I think if you ask their fans, they're playing worse right now. You know, the situation in Tigerville is not pleasant for the fans. They are very, very, very frustrated with their team. Caleros has had poor second halves in the victory against Toronto and, of course, the comeback loss to the Owls. So, you know, since returning from his injury, the hope is that they'll be able to find four quarters that are good for the home team in Hamilton. And, of course, the bye week is for Ottawa this week. They have no partner. And, you know, I guess we can, you know, if this was another year and if I wasn't on the air, I might refer to them as the Sad Sacks, not the Red Blacks. Wait, I said that out loud. Don't kill me. I couldn't help myself. Which is the problem Ottawa has been fighting. They haven't been able to help themselves either. They can't score. They can't catch the ball. Burris is in deep hot water in the capital. But then again, nothing a victory won't cure. And the Ticats, their opposition, the Red-Black opposition, haven't been that great that they look like they will not be overcome. Now, on a more serious note, and sadly, we lost an icon in the CFL this week. The Hamilton Tiger Cats are sad to announce that Paul Weller, Pigskin Pete from 1976 to 2006, 30 years, that spanned 30 years, has passed away. This is the guy I grew up with. No offense to the Pigskin Pete that's out there right now. He's just a kid. Pigskin Pete was, I don't know how to explain this other than he was Mr. Hamilton Tiger Cat. And we'll all miss him. And, you know, I have a lot of great memories in going to I Never Win Stadium, named because the Argos never did win at I Never Win Stadium. And enjoyed many a game with him, leading the way in the Oski Wee Wee chant. And I guess, you know, it just came to my head right now. I think I'm going to dig up that Oski Wee Wee chant, and we're going to, you know, everybody's got to learn how to do it. You all have to learn how to do it. There, learn. And you'll learn a little bit about the history.
This team, this cheer actually originated with the 1925 NHL Hockey Hamilton Tigers, which we're now trying to get an NHL team back, as you know. And a guy named Vince Wirtz used to jump on the ice with his big fur coat and bowler hat and do this cheer. And then it translated over to the football side because, well, there was no more hockey team. They went to New York.
Yeah.
So that cheer went from Vince to his son, Bill Wirtz. Bill carried it on until, around 70s. And then Pigskin Pete picked it up, Paul Weiler, and he just retired and handed it to a new guy. So this cheer has been going, well, do the math. From, say, 1925, 75 plus 9 is?
A long time,
there
Bob.
There you go. 84.
Exactly.
Almost 90 years old
this
year.
Yeah. And you'll see it at the games. The guy's got a bowler hat because they've kept that tradition from day one. So it goes like this. Oski wee wee.
Oski wee wee.
Oski wah wah.
Oski wah wah.
Holy Mackinac.
Holy Mackinac.
Tigers.
Tigers.
Eat them raw.
Eat them raw. Okay.
There you go. And
Oski wee wee. Oski wawa.
Oski wawa. Holy Mackinac. Tigers. Eat them raw.
All
right. There we go. Yep. I wish we, the Argos, had, something like that. I'm not sure that we do have a song. But I don't know the words. And it's important to note that CFL fans are very demonstrative. They get dressed up. I'm one of them. I don't dress up as well as most, but I do my little bit. It's something that's part of the CFL thing. When you go to the Grey Cup, you're going to see everybody done up. And Paul Weller and the icon that is Pigskin Pete is part of that, just an ordinary guy wearing a bowler hat, cheering his team on. Now, every team has their mascots. Every team has, I think even a few at least, have people that are well-known to the home team. Let's start by saying hello, and then we'll talk about maybe who, out of respect for Paul Weller, we'll talk about some of those chant leaders, fan leaders. You educate me on who they are, where they are, and how they do their thing. But first, let's say hello to everybody and do our regular. So, what have you been up to, Kelly?
Not a lot, man. Just enjoying the week and trying to stay warm here on the prairies. It's not quite as bad as Alberta, but we're chilly here too. And definitely thinking about Paul Weiler and his family today, and just any time anybody loves the game as much as that man did, I simply sit back and adore. He was a great person, and he'll be missed.
Yeah, typically CFL. There's nothing that describes or defines the CFL like people like Paul Weller. It's definitely true. Mr. Schmidt, how's your week going?
Oh, not too bad. I got a new job starting here Friday, so it's keeping me busy.
Oh, cool. That's great. Is it working with wood?
It'll take a lot out of my woodwork, but what the heck.
There you go.
It's a shutdown, so it's straight through. So.
It's a shutdown? Oh!
Yeah.
So it's like a new definition for the job, I guess, is what you're saying?
No, it's a shutdown means you work until they shut it or they start it back up.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
I think I understand what you just said. Douglas J. Campbell, buddy, how's it going?
It is going well, going well. Thank you for asking.
How's your week been going?
Well, not too bad. My wife is really sick. As a matter of fact, she's in bed already, so just kind of been busy working and taking care of her this week. Hopefully she'll get better by this weekend. Our anniversary's coming up, so hopefully she'll be able to get out of the house and we can go celebrate our anniversary.
Is this your parole year, or you're still doing time?
Parole year, huh? Yeah, I won't be voicing that one to her.
I don't get parole.
No, not unless you want me to tell her that you said it, Frank. I'm sure she'd love to talk to you about that.
Then it would be the death penalty.
It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Not that bad at all. No. She's just got a really wicked bad ear infection that she's dealing with, and so she's kind of down for the count for a couple days.
I'm dealing with the same thing. Yeah.
Well,
give her the drops.
Well, a couple of years ago had one that was so bad that it actually ate a hole through the bone inside of her eardrum, and it actually caused some of her brain to start to come out of the hole. And we took her to the hospital on Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah, not kidding. No, let me tell you something. This is
how
bad it was.
Are you sure it wasn't a bullet hole? It wasn't a bullet hole?
Oh, no. No. But I'll tell you what. This is how bad it was. We took her into the hospital on a Saturday. They said if we had waited till that Monday, she would not be here.
Okay, I should stop laughing at this point.
Oh, yeah, it was that bad. Right. They said they'd never seen anything like it. They'd never seen anything like it. So this one's not near as bad. But she's on medications, and she's getting some rest. So while she's in there sleeping, I'm going to talk to my CFL with you fellas.
There you go. And also with us, where's Waldo Manasseh Gimardine? How's it going, Manasseh?
It's going great, man. The antagonist is back. It's been fantastic. The one everyone loves to hate has got to be on the show, man.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's not complete.
I don't know about the love part, but the hating part's pretty it's locked in.
Oh, yeah.
Just kidding. And also,
in rare form tonight.
Oh, yeah, sure I am. Rarified. The air here is getting, it's kind of, I have to stop working outside in the backyard because of the rain, so I went in the garage, and maybe I should have left some of those paint cans closed. With us also tonight, of course, is our, talk about hate, Christopher Jones.
Hate what? What are you talking about?
I hate dinner. Didn't you hate dinner? I hate dinner. I heat dinner all the
time. I'm eating
dinner
right now.
You barbecuing? You on the grill?
No, I got chicken. I'm already there.
Chicken. Oh,
chicken.
Good. Cool. So how's your week been?
Busy and frustrating.
Oh, no. Is the frustrating part because you're busy or you happen to be busy while you're frustrated?
No, it's just things don't go right, and I'm dealing with a pregnant daughter, and she's less than stable.
Been there, done that.
Is this the married one, the one that just got married?
That's my only daughter, yes.
Oh, you only have one. Okay, then. Yeah, okay. So you got a bun in the oven, and sometimes the oven's turned up a little too high.
Yeah.
And they get a little crispy.
She's a challenge when she wasn't pregnant.
What?
For me.
Oh, Frank. Oh shit.
What? They get a little
context of what you're talking about. They didn't see. Never mind. Just go ahead, man.
Oh no, yeah. Don't take what I'm saying literal. I'm just saying that they're a little overdone. You know, when they're pregnant sometimes. It's all part of the program. It can be very frustrating. I sat in the delivery room for four kids, so I totally understand how bad it can be being a husband. Don't let them hold your hand, especially if you have your wedding ring on. That could be deadly and painful. And so, but I haven't had a daughter pregnant yet. Knock on wood. I got wood here somewhere.
Use your head.
Yeah, there you go.
I was waiting for somebody to say that.
Just pass. Well, you know who has a lot of wood? Schmitty does.
That's right.
Yeah.
Schmitty's got a
Woody is us. Yeah, he's Woody is us.
Schmitty's got wood. Huh?
Woody, yeah, he's got lots.
He's willing to share.
He already asked me if he could share his wood with me, and I said, no freaking way. All right. Maybe I should have changed the listing for the show today to adult. the games this week, we'll talk about them. But first, let's talk about some of the either fans or, you know, Paul Weller was, the definition of a Hamilton Tiger Cat fan. You know, he was part of the game, if you will. Share with me what you think of him. And you can even throw in people that you've seen. Like, we've got a guy, Frank Kirby, who used to be a mascot for a radio station, one of our friends on Facebook. And he was a chicken, I think. A chicken or something. Anyway, some dirty bird. I don't know which one. A what?
Dirty bird.
I don't know which, but he was.
I can't repeat what I said.
Oh, okay.
Is remember, he just remember, about exactly like the Disney Donald Duck kind of thing, basically?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's not a chicken. The San Diego chicken.
It's a seagull.
He's a seagull? So he is a dirty bird.
He's crapping on everything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a shithole.
He is a dirty bird. And speaking of dirty birds, the dirtiest of dirty birds has joined us finally. Mr. Townsend, how are you doing and how's your week going? I understand you've taken a step back from your new adventure to go back to the old adventure.
Yeah, Frank, how you doing, bro?
I took
a step back, man, so I can go back to what I love doing the best, man, training students and putting out good drivers. So, yeah, I took a step back. But, you know, hey, it is what it is, brother.
And other than that, how's your week been going? How's the little sweetie? I saw you post a couple pictures with her in the driver's seat. When are you going to put her in the passenger seat? When are you going to put her in the driver's seat?
In about 17 more years.
There you go. You're not one of those idiots. You're not one of those idiots who takes your one-year-old, your two-year-old, and drives around and lets the kid handle the steering wheel.
Nah, not me.
I got one of those on the street here in a pickup truck. Puts his kid on his lap and his kid drives. I mean, obviously the kid can't reach the pedal, right? But that's, you know, neither here or there.
Right. And you know what? And I want to make something clear. For everybody to know that looked at the picture, I was not driving when I took the picture. We were sitting still with the car in park, and the car was turned off. So I would never put my daughter in the passenger seat that small in the seatbelt driving down the highway or the streets.
I know, Mike. I was just teasing you.
I didn't even see the picture, so you're good with me, buddy.
Right.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
Mike,
there was 22.
You know what?
There's 22 comments on that picture, and not one of them said, "Where's the car seat?"
Right. You know what I'm saying?
And they're all women.
You know what, Chris? Actually, I was getting inboxes on that, man. You know what I'm saying? I was like, wait a minute. We were sitting still. We were just taking selfies. You know what I'm saying?
I'm gonna have to go see this picture now.
Yeah, no, she's just sitting there pretty as a picture. She's sitting there pretty as a picture. You can tell the car's not moving because she's literally leaning forward, you know, in the seat, just as if you could tell she's just standing still. You're not like that dad over here. We have a highway here called the 407. It's a toll road. And this guy was in a van, and he had his son with a towel with the door open holding it over the license plate so the camera couldn't get his license plate while he was on the highway.
Oh, wow.
Smart man.
Wow. Wow, what some people will do to save a couple of bucks.
Yeah,
you got to do what you got to do, man.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you say we get to some football, guys?
Sounds good.
Okay, let's get her started. Wait. Now, one at a time. Give me your reflections on what makes the CFL different with their fans. I'm using Paul Weller as an example. Start with you, Kelly. What makes you think of the CFL on a personal note, on a fan note? What makes our fans different than NFL fans, let's say?
You know, creativity. I have to go with creativity. I see more funny fans in the CFL than I do in the NFL, but maybe it's because I don't follow the NFL as closely. But anyways, either way, I want to point out a man named Sandy Montes from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. For about 20 years before the city fire department ordered him not to perform his stunts, was known as the Flame, and used to shoot fireworks out of a football helmet, a special kind of custom-made football helmet.
I remember him.
Yeah, the Flame, and anybody who watches CFL during the 1980s knows who Sandy Monte the Flame is.
Yeah.
And you know, this guy was a I mean, right in the middle of the stands, shooting off fireworks like a European soccer match.
Talk about crispy.
For sure.
How about you, Schmitty?
Just the excitement from the CFL is just way much better than the NFL. I mean, I grew up with both, from my dad, from the NFL, cheering and CFL, and it's just the excitement, the fans. You got your fans everywhere, like we all talked on Facebook,
yeah,
and let's talk CFL. You got your fans everywhere, you're idiots and all that kind of stuff, but there's no way in anybody in my mind is going to change me from the CFL to the NFL. It's just too exciting, except for that big game.
Spoken with sheer excitement in your voice. Jay, how's it going, buddy? How about you? Mr. Campbell?
Oh, sorry, sir. I thought you said something else.
Yeah, I said Jay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I tell you what, the difference I see is that with the CFL, it's more the hometown fans. You know, the NFL, you got fans spread out all over the place, you know, and they can be very fickle, you know, myself included. You know, if their team's not winning, they'll jump off the bandwagon. But the CFL, I kind of noticed that their fans will stick with their team regardless.
Unless
and,
you're in Hamilton this week.
Yeah, unless you're in Hamilton this week, I guess. I don't know. I don't know very much about the gentleman that passed away that was a Tiger Cat fan, other than what I read. But he kind of reminded me in a way of my own father, who has not, I don't think either, has ever missed a Detroit Tigers game since I can remember. As a matter of fact, I called him earlier this evening. That's what they were doing. And, of course, he's watching the Tigers game. So he's been a huge fan ever since I can remember. And regardless of what their record is or how good or how bad they're playing, he doesn't miss a game. As a matter of fact, my mom will go to a will go upstairs to watch her stuff because she knows he's not going to give up that TV in the living room to watch the Tigers. So
there you go.
So he sticks with them, you know. So that's kind of what that guy reminded me of.
Cool. Manasseh, how about you?
Yeah, I guess outside of Saskatchewan and Winnipeg, it feels like it's basically minor league football. Best way to sum it up.
And building on that hate. Christopher Jones.
I don't know where the hell that comment came from, Manasseh. That was just, like, weird. But really weird. So what's my question here? You want me to know, tell you what the difference between CFL and NFL is?
Well, the fan experience. Well, you know, the fan experience. You know, we get more I can interrupt and go with my opinion. We get more involved in the game. You know, I'm not saying they don't drink as much as NFL fans. You know, but they get more involved in the game, and the game is it's not. How can I put this? The game is central to what's going on, but the fans feel like they're responsible for contributing to the experience more in the CFL than they are in the NFL. I don't know if I said it right, but that's what I mean. Something like that. You figure.
Okay.
It.
Well, I've actually never been to an NFL game, and I think I've only watched like three of them on TV, and they put me to sleep. So I'm really not going to – I can't give you a fair comparison. I think that the fans actually believe that they are part of the game, that they can change the outcome of the game, and they have. And I've seen the fans change the outcome of a game. So participation is not only it's required. It's mandatory. We're there for a purpose. And I don't know whether it's the Argo Lifers, whether it's the Ryder fans, the Bomber fans, the Lion fans, whatever, the Ticat fans, the Box J boys. The fans are there to participate in the game, and they are an intricate part of it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, there are people like the people you just mentioned in the NFL, but when you consider there's 80,000 people in the crowd, and you won't find as many, you know, in 10% of the crowd, in the NFL, or should say in the CFL. There seems to be more participation from the fans. Mike, what do you think from a Detroit guy, another Detroit guy?
Well, I'm going to piggyback off what a couple of people said, Manasseh and Chris. My experience, well, I've never been to either an NFL game or a CFL game, but by me watching on TV, Chris, when it comes to the NFL, you said put you to sleep. It all depends on what team you watch play, because you got some NFL teams out here like
Green Bay,
San Francisco, Seattle, Detroit,
Baltimore.
That can put up Baltimore.
They were actually Super Bowl games, Mike. They were. That's the only game I've ever watched. Is three different Super Bowl games, and they were boring. I'd rather play pool with the girls with the big. Never mind.
Well, you watch some of these games. You watch the teams that got the high power offenses, where you can see them put up 40 points a game. And certain players like Adam Manasseh can contribute to this. Adrian Peterson, Megatron. You know, guys like that that can change the outcome of an offense with one hand of a ball being thrown to them. Now, like Frank said, 80,000 people in the fans at an NFL game compared to 40,000. I mean, you look at a CFL game, you got guys dressing up like the Royal Warriors. Their body's painted green and white or black and gold like the Hamilton Ticats. Now, you know, you go to an NFL game, you still got some of that too, but the fans are basically booing and cheering, not really getting into the game like a CFL game does.
Taking part.
And like Manasseh. Yeah, taking part. And like Manasseh said, I agree with him to a certain point about some of the teams being like a minor league, except for like Saskatchewan, BCE. You know, some teams, you know, they step up their offense, it'd be more people getting into the game.
I meant by that comment was the actual crowd. Like, you know, Frank's comment was about the fans. And any of you guys who saw, because I know on TSN they had the Detroit – New York and the Arizona-San Diego game that was on Monday night, the doubleheader. And if you saw that, the both crowds in both games were amazing. They were loud. They were into it. They were great games, great offensive showcases. You know, Mike, you probably saw the Detroit game. If you compare that to every single atmosphere in the CFL, what we witnessed on Detroit on Monday night, it's not even close. I mean, the crowd was into it. Every single, like, second and third down, they were loud. They were involved. They were an active part of the game. They actually had an impact. You go to the CFL, let's contrast that. The entire Eastern Division, forget about it. We can't even go there. It's not even on. It's not even in the same planet, let alone same
league. I think Hamilton.
The only
Hamilton.
Places is – oh, no, Frank stops. The Hamilton. Anyway, we all saw the Labor Day Classic. The crowd was barely into it. It wasn't even that loud. I mean, all honesty. Winnipeg,
okay.
You can agree with me too, but not say that it all depends on what team in the NFL is playing. Also, you know the different characters. That's what.
But I mean, you know the crowds are into it though. Like,
yeah,
I've never seen a bad crowd in the NFL except in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's the only place where you won't see a good crowd. Everywhere else in the NFL, if their team's in the game, they're in it. They're actually a part of the game. They play into the football, which
is the crowd. I didn't mean about the. You know, the booing and the cheering. I was referring to the actual taking part and going through the trouble of, you know, going through your own ritual before you go to the game, like I do, like other people do in the CFL. I don't see that happening in the NFL as much. I think the NFL is more business-like, and business is good, and that's great. But, you know, I was just referring to the fun part of the game. You're not going to see a pigskin Pete in the NFL. You know?
I don't think we need to. In all honesty.
Yeah,
I don't see the appeal of pigskin Pete. What's the big deal?
You might not see a pigskin Pete, but when you go places like Green Bay, you see the cheeseheads. And then when you go to Oakland, I forgot what they call
Green
them guys
Bay,
in Oakland.
Green Bay
man.
Is,
oh, the black hole.
CFL.
Yeah,
Green Bay is so CFL-like. Green Bay is so CFL-like. You know, and a lot of people...
See, that's an insult to Green Bay to say that.
Why?
CFL-like. Like, come on now. We're talking about the number one or maybe number two franchise in the league, in the NFL. That's worth $2.5 billion.
Up again.
They're all actually in eighth place, Manasseh.
Well, I mean, everyone knows. I mean, I'm talking about, like, name recognition. It comes Cowboys, Packers, Steelers.
Sure.
Those are three teams that come to mind. There's nothing about them that CFL like, guys. The CFL, let's be honest.
Even their uniforms are, even people commented that came from the NFL players where they refer to the Edmonton Eskimos as the Green Bay of the North. You know, the cold is there.
Right, because they copied the Packers uniforms.
Manasseh, I have a question for you. If you have total disdain for the CFL in the way that you do, why do you follow it so much?
No, I don't have disdain for it. I'm just being honest with it. I mean, you guys are, like, trying to make it seem like more than it is. I'm saying outside of Saskatchewan and Winnipeg, nowhere else is there really a buzz. I mean, just turn on the TV and look at the game. You're telling me
when you watch a game
at Montreal or Toronto or Hamilton or
BC
or even Edmonton for that matter?
The buzz in Hamilton is so loud right now. They're so frustrated with their team. There's plenty of buzz in Hamilton. The buzz in Toronto doesn't exist.
I'm talking about on
the
game. When you turn it on, you don't see it. You saw it. You saw it on the Banjo Bowl. You see it in the Labor Day Classic.
I was at the Labor Day Classic, and it wasn't that quiet.
I don't know why you're dissing on Hamilton. I think Hamilton has the number one or number two fans in this league, and it's back and forth between Winnipeg. Riders don't have the best fans. They just have the most fans, and their sheer numbers.
Oh, but they're loud, though. Numbers. Like, when you go to a Rider game,
all they're missing is the stadium.
Well, they're not much. I don't think they're much louder than Winnipeg. I mean, Winnipeg has proven to be a pretty good following for their team. They've done a pretty good job of, you know, the buzz that you're talking about. I don't think there's a team in the West that doesn't have buzz, you know.
Edmonton doesn't.
Oh, well, no.
Neither does Calgary.
I don't agree again.
When you turn it on, you can tell. It's not the number of people that show up. That's not the issue. It's about the crowd understanding how they play into the game and how they're part of the theater of the game. I watched so many CFL games, it's not even close. When I watched the NFL this weekend, I was blown away by the contrast. It was like, it's amazing. I don't even know how you guys can go back to that and then even try to pretend like it's comparable when there's nothing there.
I'm very happy with the way things are. I'm just saying it for what it is.
It's not like I'm dissing it. I'm just being honest with what it is.
I'm not trying to be biased against my own team, but did any of y'all guys see the Monday night game besides Anase and myself?
No, I didn't see the game.
You know, y'all missed a good offensive show.
I'm too busy watching CFL games. I'm too busy watching CFL games.
Right. I understand what you're saying, Frank.
I got four games a week I watch. I watch all the CFL games. And when and if I have time, I'll check out the NFL. That's great. But you know what? It's like, you know, I like home cooking. What can I tell you? You know, that's why I like the CFL. It's home cooking. You may not like the way my wife cooks, but...
I just wondering now, like you watch TFC soccer at all, Frank, for the MLS?
Absolutely. I've seen a couple of games. I
watched the MLS down here a lot, too, and I just, on the weekend, I saw the English Premier League. And when I watched that, I was blown away by just how much more talented, how much more faster, how much better the whole atmosphere there was. It's the same way with the CFL. When you go to the NFL, it's like, my God, the difference, guys. It's like, I haven't watched the NFL in a while.
But Manasseh,
so
I couldn't believe it. When I go out, these guys are on such a higher level,
it's unreal.
When I go out for dinner, I don't always order what I like the best. I like to try sample different things, and I'm open-minded to give something else a chance to see what it's like. And I'm more than happy with the CFL. And I'm also more than happy with missing games in the NFL. I don't miss them. I mean, you know, the NFL is great.
But you know what I mean, right? Like, you like soccer, right?
Oh, hey,
right?
Listen,
it's one thing to watch TFC.
But I'm just saying sometimes it doesn't hurt to watch the premiere. Two games that are played the same way. And now you're trying to say, okay, well, that translates into the CFL is a different game. There's a part of the game that the NFL will never capture in my mind. The rouge.
Really? What was the rouge stuff? Come on, Frank. The rouge. The fact that you get a point on a missed field goal, let's be honest, guys, that's ridiculous.
If you don't understand the rouge, then you don't understand the game.
Well, it's not understanding it. Let's be honest, guys. The fact that if it's a tie game, and let's say someone's kicking a game-winning field goal, they miss it, and then they get a rouge and they win? Come on. Let's be real. That's ridiculous. How does that make any sense?
Manasseh, is the goal of the game not to get the ball in the end zone?
That's in the context of the fact that... I get up for a punt. If you want to give a rouge for a punt, that's fine. But to give a rouge on a missed field goal, that sort of defeats the purpose. That's almost like what – that's rewarding
okay,
failure.
Okay, what's harder to get?
You're not. You're rewarding being the ball in the end zone.
I got
– that's why Americans don't understand this game.
Christopher, I got this. I got – which is harder to accomplish, a rouge or a convert after a touchdown?
Well, depending on what, on a punt or you mean on a field goal?
Depending on what? Depending on what? A convert is a joke. I find a rouge far more interesting and far more compelling than a convert. How many converts get missed a year?
You're referring to the rouge on a punt, that's okay. That's one thing.
No.
But you're talking about on a missed field goal, that's okay, Frank? Come on, man.
No, make any sense.
Yeah, because then the team has the option to run the ball back out. If they don't, then they have to give up a point. So they have to kneel down and give the ball back, and they get the ball out at the 35. Otherwise, run it out. And that's exciting. I've never seen
well,
a missed field goal exciting in the NFL. It's boring. They take the knee, they go
now,
get the ball on the side, and
let,
it's boring.
Let me explain something to y'all about the NFL. Now, there is no rule in the NFL that the guys cannot run a missed field goal out. They can do it. They just don't do it.
And why is that, Mike? Because they get a
There's
free
no
pass
incentive.
To, what is it, the 30-yard line. What is
because
the
field goal post is at the back of the end zone. It's not in the front of the end zone like it is in the CFL. I mean, let's
be
real.
But the end
zone's that's what it is. It's just there's more room.
Your end zone is the size of a postage stamp.
Exactly. And you
well,
can't
I mean,
get out of the end
zone. Antonio Cromartie ran a 109-yard missed field goal back for a touchdown. The same game when Peterson broke the single-game rushing record. So I've seen it. I
remember
the NFL is just – you know, it's just the end zone where
that.
The field goal.
I remember that.
Like, why is the field goal post in the front of the end zone? I never
and
got Calvary that.
Did that.
Like, that single-handedly
well,
ran
used
back
to
killed
they
Winnipeg.
Ran back they ran
well,
back
Manasseh, then
you
remember
let me turn my microphone
back
on.
Everybody's microphone's on.
Oh, I thought it was off.
You know, no. You know, it's kind of funny because, if I remember correctly, back in the day, didn't the NFL have the goal post up front just a few years ago?
When they first started,
right?
That,
but
they
then
did
they pushed it back because they did they didn't like the fact that it was interfering with guys trying to catch touchdown passes, like what happened at the Banjo Bowl when Aaron Kelly
no
got
kidding.
That touchdown. Right, so I'm saying so that's it doesn't make any sense when it's interfering with the play. It doesn't make any sense to have it there.
Well, okay, listen, I'm from Michigan too, but I'm going to have to differ with you. I like the fact that if they miss a field goal and they don't run it out, they get something for. I think to try to compare the way the two leagues play is a little unfair because it's a different style. I was in football heaven on Sunday because on one TV I had NFL Red Zone going, and I brought another one out from the back and stuck it out there and put a splitter on, and I watched the CFL at the same time. So I that's what I wanted, more Sundays like that. You know, I got the best of both worlds as far as I was concerned.
All right, I think we've killed this one pretty good. I think this one this subject is dead. We'll move on, let's talk about the games that are coming up. And holy crap, look at that! Isn't that nice? We got football. Fantastic, yeah. And as I said, let's go first with Montreal. And Edmonton. Is Montreal for real? Are they going to be able to? We'll start with from the bottom of the list this time, and that would be you, Mike Townsend. Is Montreal up to beating Edmonton this week in Edmonton?
Yes, and the reason I say that is because I think with Jeff Garcia.
Fucking Netflix.
We got your call. Tell us you got good news.
I don't know why. Oops. Sorry.
Okay.
I turned off the wrong mic.
Okay. When Jeff Garcia is in the fold, I think the offensive scheme play that Ryan Dinwiddie is putting together, I think they're not as hard as they were when they first started. All these difficult plays, all this difficult play calling, I think they went back to mathematics and started doing the simple offensive plays. Three and out, and three in post, and 10 in post, and 5 in post. And
with Crompton, the receivers are getting the ball. I mean, he spreaded the ball out Sunday to, what, four, five, six different receivers. I mean, the ball was well spreaded. And when the ball is spreaded out between the monster receivers, you can see that Montreal offense is clicking. Now, if they do that again this Sunday or whenever they play, they're gonna burn Edmonton, man. Chad Johnson is getting to the fold. Deron Carter is the starting pack, the Deron Carter of old. S.J. Green is getting in the mix. Brandon London, he's going to get in there. When you get Kenny Stafford back, man, I mean, come on, man. It's going to be an offensive show. And then we can't really say too much bad about the defense. The defense, I mean, it speaks for itself. Bowman, Cox, I mean, come on. Andrew Lou, when he gets
in
the game.
And then what about Rodgers? What about Rodgers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Ordinary
yeah.
superstar
I mean,
son. He looks pretty good on special teams, on punt returning, kick returning. So, yeah, their team is rounding into shape very quickly. And both
very
Hamilton and Toronto, if they want to make the playoffs, because of the poor start by the Eastern teams, you know, only two teams are going to make the playoffs in the East. Would you agree, Christopher?
Yeah. Going to happen. You got my mic off.
No, I don't.
Okay, sorry. Yes, I agree.
And how do you think this Montreal-Edmonton game is going to play out?
Is Riley playing? Because if Mike Riley was playing, they would have beat Calgary. So if Riley's playing, then Montreal is going down. If Riley's not playing, Nichols is, then it will be a close game and very close to call, but I'm picking Edmonton.
So the Argos are safe at first for a little while. For a little while. How about you, Manasseh? The Edmonton crowd's going to be into the game or not, doesn't matter, but what do you think of the team? Will the team be into the game, and will Montreal, has Montreal turned the corner as a team this year?
No, not yet. They just benefited from poor competition in Ottawa and Hamilton, but their issues are their offensive line is still terrible. That's what's the ultimate reason their offense has been struggling with their QBs, and Edmonton's not going to make it any easier. Their defensive line is too strong, and if Nichols is in the game, Chris hit it on the head. If Nichols is in the game, Montreal has a shot, and it's going to have to be a low-scoring, you know, 17-14 type deal for Montreal to win. If Riley's in there, Montreal, Edmonton wins by probably two or three touchdowns.
So you don't really think that Montreal's found some sort of new life right now?
Well, against the East, they probably have. But, you know, them going all the way out west and beating Edmonton, it's not going to happen.
Well, fair enough. Okay, how about you, Doug?
Well, I like Edmonton in this game. I think it's going to be close. Montreal looked really good this past weekend. I really was very impressed with their offense and the way Crompton was throwing the ball around. And I tell you what, my hat's off to that young man, because I was watching the telecast, and during the telecast, I overheard them saying that his ex-fiance, still girlfriend, something or other, had passed away just like 2 days before that game.
Ex-fiance,
and
he was going to see his family after the
right.
game.
Right, yeah, and he still played. And he still played and played that well. That I found that to be really courageous on his part. I don't know if a lot of people could have done that. Myself included, I don't know if I could have played under those circumstances. But he not only played, but played well. And maybe he did it in some sort of way to honor her right there. But my hat's off to him. I thought that was really courageous on his part. But moving away from that point, I thought he played really well. I liked the way the offense was directed. He was whipping the ball all over the place. And I find it hard to believe that this is the same Montreal team that a few weeks back I gave up for dead. Oh, ooh, that's probably a bad pun. Sorry. That I thought wouldn't win a game this year. He played well. The team seemed to respond. Maybe they kind of were inspired by what he was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they can carry that on this week and maybe pull an upset. I still like Edmonton, but I think it'll be close.
How about you, Stormy?
Well, I don't care who Edmonton's playing, which quarterback they're playing. They're still going to beat Montreal. Which McCall said that if they would have had Riley in last week against Calgary, they would have won. Well, you know what? Calgary let them off in the second half. That was plain and simple. But anyways, Edmonton still has way more talent than Montreal, and it's not going to be close. It's going to be 36-18 for Edmonton.
Okay. How about you, Kelly?
Well,
Kelly?
I have to go with Storm there. I mean, I think Edmonton's going to win big either way. I think Montreal is kind of off to schneid, but one thing I want to ask about Montreal, and you guys will all know, is Dave Stala retired or what? Like, where's he in this?
With the team. I don't think he's retired.
Well, you know, I mean, we talk about all these great receivers, and I'm serious, guys.
He's a victim of the numbers game.
This guy is, I mean, he should never be a victim of the numbers game, either by merit or by respect. Like, he's a legend in this league, and he really needs to see the ball. Anyways, yeah, I think Edmonton big. I'm going to be a little more conservative and say 28-10.
I'm saying Montreal's going to win this game because I'm crazy that way. But it's going to be close. Next game, and I'll start with this one, the Argos in Calgary. Can they catch lightning in a bottle again? Can they defeat the Calgary Stampeders like they did last year without Caleros? I don't know. Did they have to bring in a backup quarterback? The Argos are in tough. The house is not in order. If you heard my rant earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show, you'll understand where it's coming from. Raley has to sell the team. This team now is going nowhere fast, in a hurry. And it's kind of shameful. We do have a small crowd of fans that have been loyal to them. But I think what you're hearing now is what we've been feeling for the past few years, and that is the team has lost a lot of key players. It's no surprise the team has sunk as far as the record's concerned. Too many players have left, and the depth in the Argo team just doesn't exist. But as I told Storm, will tell you, the roles when Calgary came to town against Toronto earlier in the season were reversed. I won't be surprised if the Argos win this game. How about you, Kelly?
Sorry, I got you on mute again. Which game is this one?
Argos, Calgary. Saturday.
Yeah. You know, I picked Edmonton because they have more to lose than Montreal with the tight race in the West. And, you know, just based on that factor alone, you got to pick Calgary too because they're in the race. Even though they're leading the race, they want to stay there, right? So mm-hmm. with Edmonton playing in the East, it's going to be an Alberta sweep out east. I'm saying Calgary 32, Toronto 24.
Fair enough. How about you, Stormy?
Well, yeah, just like you said there, it's Calgary's a powerhouse, so they don't want to let up like they did in the fourth quarter against Edmonton. And Huff will have them on that one. But depends where Ray comes from too, right? So it could be interesting, but it's not going to be that way. It's going to be Calgary 38 and Toronto 5 field goals.
No touchdowns.
No.
Doug?
Yes. Is this game being played in Toronto?
Nope.
It's being played in Calgary. Okay.
Nope.
I think you have to let Calgary big in this one. Toronto seems to be struggling right now. Trying to figure out what to do when I guess a little bit. Meanwhile, Calgary seems to be hitting on all cylinders. I agree they did kind of let up a little bit there towards the end against, you know, in their game last week. And that was obvious, I think, by the way. Edmonton kind of crawled back in to some extent. So hopefully they'll keep the pedal to the floor this weekend and get the job done and move on to the game after that.
How about you, Manasseh?
Yeah, I think I'm picking Toronto to win. I'm still maintaining, even though Calgary's 9-1, they're still overrated. They're just being bloated by a schedule that's been basically Eastern dominant. If you look at their schedule, they've only played Edmonton. They played Edmonton three times, swept all three games, two of them where they had Mike Riley out. And the only other Western team they played was BC at home, which BC won. So, in all honesty, Calgary is not the team we all think they are, that their record seems to point them to be. So, I think Toronto with Dury back, Owens might be back. This is the game Ricky Ray comes out, and I think he's going to put on a big show. And I think the Argos are going to win by two touchdowns.
Wow. It's a very positive take on the Argos' behalf. How about you, Christopher?
This is going to be a sad game. Toronto does not even have a hope. I think Storm is being generous with five field goals. the Calgary defense is just going to smother them. Calgary has an offense. Toronto does not. Toronto doesn't have a defense. Calgary does. You know, the record of 3-6 that Toronto has flatters them. So, no,
wow.
Calgary is just going to wipe the floor with them.
Okay. I'm kind of thinking it's going the other way, but that's cool. No, it's all right. I can take it. Mike?
Well, the future Dallas Cowboy quarterback, Bolivar Mitchell, I think he's going to have another field day, and I'm picking Calgary 32-24.
The future Dallas Cowboy quarterback?
Yep.
You think he's going home?
First. Oh, yeah. Believe me when I tell you Jerry Jones loves his Texas quarterbacks. So just don't think that he's not watching Bo Levi Mitchell.
There you go. Okay. That takes care of the Argos being manhandled by Calgary. Winnipeg, finally, for the most part, doesn't have to play Saskatchewan. That's probably a sigh of relief for them. And the BC Lions have to make they didn't look very good even in victory against Ottawa, 7-5. How do you see this game shaking out, Mike?
I see. I mean, we got Glenn going against the veteran Glenn going against Drew Willie. I see Drew Willie bombing that defense up, man. I mean, he's going to throw more long bombs than we can count. You know what I'm saying? And it's going to be a dogfight, but I see Winnipeg with the slight edge, 35-33.
How about you, Christopher?
I don't know what team's going to show up from BC. Sometimes they look like they are Grey Cup champions. Other times they couldn't play peewee flag football. So I'm very disheartened with my team this year because that game against Ottawa was pathetic. Although the defense stood on its head, the rest of the team just didn't show up. If BC comes to play football, it's not even going to be close. If they don't, Winnipeg's going to take it again. I'm not making any better prediction than that. I'm sad with my team.
Yeah, you know, I think you're being a little harsh on BC. I think, you know, there's a lot of emotional stuff that's going on, Christopher, you know, with Lule about to come in, Lule coming in, you know, then he gets injured.
7-5 in Ottawa. 7-5. I don't care how emotional you are, you score more than 7 points in a game.
Well, I think Ottawa's defense is the only thing that's keeping them, keeping them from losing big, to be fair. Because they, without that defense, they would not be the Red Blacks. They would be the Sad Sacks. They just don't have an offense. And it's scary how no offense. When you see, they're pretty good at, you know, they're pretty good at running back. They got guys that should be better receivers, and they've got a quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback, and they can't generate any offense. But I think their defense has been what's really been the best part of their game. But unfortunately, the new fans in the stadium want to see offense and the frustrations, you know, coming to bear. You know, it is what it is. BC, I think, you know, they're a lot better than you're giving them credit for. I think it's just they're in the tough Western Division, and like I said, it's emotionally tough. They can't make a mistake, and they're playing a little tight sometimes, I think. When they forget about the situation they're in, BC's just incredible. I mean, just at running back. And they've had some injuries that have sort of, you know.
Agreed. I'm not arguing with you at all there. They have played lights-out football. They have played stellar ball this year, okay? And there are other days where the first game against Winnipeg, the game against the Riders, the last game against the Riders, I mean, we played lights-out football against the Riders the first game. We beat them. The last game, they went to sleep at halftime. And then we played Ottawa, and it was pathetic. So I don't think I'm being hard on them. They're being just as hard on themselves. They know what they're doing, and they're just playing inconsistent football.
Yep.
How about
Chris
you, Manasseh?
Being honest, got to give it to him. No, I just want to say that was a great call by Chris. He was being honest with his team because usually he tries to be a little biased. But the last time these two teams played, Winnipeg had 6 sacks, 2 interceptions, and 2 forced fumbles, and they won the game 24-6. He knows it. We all know it. BC's the worst team in the West. Who are we kidding here? The Bombers are going to go in there. They've had 2 weeks in a row of playing the Riders and that high-caliber defense and their dominant O-line. When they line up against BC, they're going to look at that and say, wow, what a step down. I mean, they're just going to go in there and clean house. The BC Lions, man, without Lule, they're going to be deflated. The whole team is just going to be deflated, I promise you. They're going to lose probably this, maybe 2 or 3 of their next 4 games, and they'll be out of the playoff mix by October. So Winnipeg wins by at least, I'm going to say, 35-10.
Wow. Well, it is what it is, I have to say. How about you? Let's see, who's next? We've got Dougie. You're next.
All right. I like Winnipeg in this one, too. I think that, you know, after two back-to-back weeks of playing the Riders, that they're itching to get some frustrations out. And it just so happens that it's BC that's coming up next. So I think they're going to take out a lot of that frustration on BC. The question is whether or not BC defense can rise up, you know, and meet that kind of a rush. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout. I'm not feeling that it's going to be a blowout. I think it may be 28-17 is what I'm feeling.
For Winnipeg?
Yes, for Winnipeg.
Okay, Mr. Schmidt, how about you? I really am looking forward to this one.
Yeah, it was one of my lowest scoring games of the week here. Yeah, just like Doug agreed there, is like, you know, Winnipeg's just coming off some tough losses, and they actually need this game. They really do. So I pick Winnipeg in 24-17.
How about you there, Kelly?
You know, guys, first of all, I just want to say for Bruce that he thinks Winnipeg, and I'm going to give him a big Oski wee-wee for Bruce there, and he loves us all and just wishes
Edmonton,
us well.
Edmonton Stamps and Bombers. Huh. He's going Edmonton Stamps and Bombers.
Right. So, I picked Edmonton and Calgary because they have to keep pace in a tight West race, and this is two Western teams, so it's not going to work for me here. But what I do think is that when Winnipeg's offense or defense is, or pardon me, offense is confronted with that extremely physical BC defense, I think they're going to be undisciplined. I believe the BC Lions are going to win this game, and they're going to have a bounce back week with Glenn at quarterback. I don't think his ankle is going to play too much into the game headlines. I think, you know, if they looked at what Saskatchewan did to beat Winnipeg, Winnipeg has a very tough time stopping two backs. What does BC have? They have two different kinds of backs that they can throw at Winnipeg. These guys just could not stop the run. They knew it was coming, and they could not stop the run. You can throw Kowale at them. You can throw anybody they got in that Winnipeg defense, and they they threw it at the Riders, and they couldn't stop it. And BC's line is nothing to sneeze at either. We've seen some games where Harris has gotten off, and another one where Tim Brown got off, and another one where Logan got off. So, you know, I think that three-headed monster could do some damage on Winnipeg, and I think the score is going to be a pretty high one, actually. I think BC is going to get off for 32 points, and Winnipeg's going to be right there, but not enough at 27.
Yeah, both running backs appear to not be on the injured list, so they both could very well dress and even play. I don't think there's a health issue with them. And you're right. That's one thing that Winnipeg hasn't been able to handle, and that is two running backs. I think BC is the only team that has two running backs that could be compared to Saskatchewan at this point, at least in the season. And I like BC because of Kevin Glenn. Not because of Kevin Glenn's stature as a quarterback, but more or less rallying behind him because of Lule's injury. I referred to Christopher about the emotions that the team is going through. And this will be a positive thing that they can work on, you know. I think they will win, and it won't be a lopsided victory. It'll be one where, you know, maybe it'll even come up to Willie with a couple of minutes left with a chance to be the hero again, and this time he's going to fall short. At least that's the way I see it playing out anyway. As we talked about, the CFL is the best in the world. And I hope we'll go to one game. We got one game left. We'll go to that after this. Well, let's take a short break. And, again, our condolences to the family of Paul Weller. Oscar Wee Wee means a lot. And were you talking to me there, Kelly? Oh, never mind. The mic's off anyway. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk some more CFL.
Well, now, are you sure there's any fish in here at all? Because we haven't latched into one today yet.
Tired of sitting on the sidelines? Want to be part of the game?
Be official. Be radical. The CFL is back and more radical than ever. The action never stops. It's hard-hitting, high-scoring football. Get in the game. Wear the attitude.
Go, go, go. Woo!
Be official. Be radical. CFL football. Get in the game.
You having a little popcorn?
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos cheerleaders.
This is the League of A's and BC's. It's green and red and gold and black and blue. This is a league with two official languages and many unofficial languages. It's East versus West, wheat versus iron, love versus hate. This is a league where superstars are extraordinary and ordinary at the same time. It's a league of ice, of fog, of mud and wind. And for one Sunday in November, it's the nation's glue. This is a league as diverse as a country, a league of Jacksons and Kwongs, Johnsons, Moscas, O'Shea's, and Haji Razulis. This is his league, her league, and their league. It's my league, and it's your league. This is our league.
This week, we have the two teams that played in the Grey Cup as our final game to discuss. As we all know, Hamilton went to the Grey Cup, and for some, it was a butt-kicking. It was a butt-kicking to end all butt-kicking. And things haven't gone well for the Hamilton Tiger Cats since, to be honest. they have really had a tough year. We all know about the stadium and will it open on this day? Will it open on the second game? Will it open on Labor Day? Well, the biggest problem they had this year is they brought in a young quarterback, Caleros, who had a lot of success with our team, the Argonauts, and he hasn't really had a chance, for goodness sake. I mean, you know, less than half a season left, and he's only played two games, both those games. The second half, to say the least, was forgettable for the Ticats. They almost let the Toronto Argonauts back into the game. They should have. The Argos should have beat Hamilton just by virtue of how weakly and meekly Hamilton played in the second half and gave the Argos a new life. But, you know, in Saskatchewan at the Grey Cup, they took a licking, and the Cats just haven't been the same since. And a very disappointing year thus far for them. This is a great opportunity for them to turn things around because this is where their problems began. If you were to trace back, where did Hamilton go wrong? Well, the Grey Cup, really. And I don't think they've gotten over the embarrassment of how badly they were outplayed by Saskatchewan. So they've got an opportunity here. Their team is, you know, they've got the main guys for the most part. Yeah, they don't have a running attack. And that hurts in the CFL. So, you know, it's going to be a tough weekend for Hamilton. I have faith in the fact that they're going to at least put a scare in Saskatchewan. And I'm just not sure that they have enough to actually win. Kelly, as a Saskatchewan fan, I guess you can trace back to Hamilton's. Well, I think that's where it all started for them. I think that's where it all started for them, this bad year. It just hasn't gotten better for them.
I know. I mean, they actually played pretty good in that opening game, considering like how hard we came out against them. And you know, I was optimistic that they would rebound early, but that hasn't been the case. But I mean, you know, as we talk about a lot around here, hasn't been the case at all in the entire East. So they're not out of the picture by any means. We talked about the kind of three-way tie scenario that could happen this week. There's a lot of motivation for Hamilton to win this game. Also, it's a long flight and an overnight in a hotel they probably don't want to be in. And, you know, it's an 11 o'clock in the morning in Saskatchewan time game. So that's tough. You know, you're just finishing breakfast and you're out on a football field. You know, it's going to, you know, another thing that's coincidental about that is the Riders practice at 11:20, like during the week. And, you know, I don't want to see him come out like practice, you know what I'm saying? So anyways, yeah, these are the factors that, you know, can upset the Riders, but, those are about the only factors that can upset the Riders.
There's no way there's no way we're going to see Price start, right? There's no way.
No way. No.
I believe it's Sunseri's job to lose, especially
in the next couple of games. He was at practice today. There's no plans for Price to play at all this year, like, to be quite honest. I mean, this is a guy who's a fresh seed, and we're just planting him right now, and we got to water him and fertilize him and, you know, grow him into – you know, the type of prototypical CFL quarterback that we see in him. This is a guy who Tamman's been after for a couple of years. So, you know, this
he's
is,
not that old. How can he be after him for a couple of years? He just came out of college. Wow.
Listen, he's had his eye. I mean, there was a story in Regina that I read about Tamman. So I'm just giving you what I'm hearing.
All right.
You know, this
no, but
prior
you know what
guy,
I mean. This guy hasn't even.
No.
This guy just came out of a rookie camp in Seattle.
Right. So, anyways, that's just another thing that I was just about to touch on. It's part of the Seattle connection. I'll get Manasseh to get deeper into that. And yeah, it's and Manasseh, would you please? But anyways, I'll say Riders are going to roll, despite the factors. I think that running game is going to see a lot of action this week and that you'll see us win a fairly tight ball game, but I think it'll be 28-21 riders.
Fair enough. How about you there, Mr. Schmitty?
Well, I picked this game close, even though it shouldn't be, but I just have this feeling that, you know, Hamilton's going to win this game, and it's going to be 27-24.
Well, that's pretty serious stuff there. How about you, Jay? How's it look to you, Mr. Campbell?
I think you have to go Saskatchewan in this matchup. You know, they're just, you know, they're the team to beat still. You know, the defending champs. And I think Hamilton, I agree with just about everything that's been said so far. Hamilton hasn't been the same since last year's Grey Cup. And I think that memory is still fresh in a lot of their minds. And the question is, you know, have they dealt with it? And I think judging by the record, they probably haven't. Do I think Saskatchewan's offense is going to suffer a little without Durant in the lineup? Well, yeah, sure. You know, he's their starter, so that's going to affect a team no matter what level they're at. But I think that Saskatchewan's just got too many weapons. I think Hamilton will probably try and give it the best effort they can. But in the end, I think they're going to be overwhelmed. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I like a 28-12 score.
Fair enough. How about you, Manasseh?
Yeah, first of all, just to echo off Kelly's point about Keith Price, the reason they've had him for a while is back when he was a sophomore at Washington, Brandon Taman had him on his negotiation list. So they've been planning for years to get this kid to come in, and he's their long-term answer, and he's the guy that we should all expect to be their franchise quarterback by the time they move into the stadium in 2017, because he's got everything that they're looking for as far as, like, on the field and off the field as a guy they can market. But on the actual game, the Riders are not going to skip a beat. In fact, I think they're actually going to be better with Tino Cinceri. I really think so, because teams are going to really key in on the run, and that's going to open up a lot of things deep. Especially you're going to see Dressler, Rob back on the wide side going deep, and there's going to get a lot of one-on-one, man-on-man coverages because they're going to be, you know, trying to load up the box to stop the run. And if Tino can connect on a couple plays, he could end up having a massive game, like shocking everybody with like 300-some yards and a couple touchdowns. So I'm sorry to Bruce. I hope you don't go to the game because it's going to be a tough one to watch, man. I'm just letting you know right now, Riders are going to win 35-10.
Well, he seems to think that the Cats will be unbeatable at Tim Hortons Field when the game is over.
Oh, my gosh. They only have 18,000 seats still, right? They haven't opened up the other
side.
Well,
no, we don't know about that. I don't know. You know, now that they finally got the 12-hour permission to play a game there, they'll probably get another 12-hour permission, I guess, if the 18. It was pretty undone. So, yeah, I don't know. And Bruce, you same seating. There you go. He just said it. Same seating as last time.
Yeah.
So that answers that question.
They said it's not going to be ready till about November. That's when it should be close to 100% done. So we're
Eastern
not going to see it at its full. Basically, that's when it should be about 100% done by the Eastern Final, if they're there, that is.
Yeah. But it might be in Montreal.
I hope not.
How about you, Christopher?
This is another one of those waffle games for me. Tino Cinceri, I think, is a better quarterback. I think that he is going to do really well for the Riders for the rest of the season. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time for him to get some rhythm and some pace with the receivers and with the rest of the game. So this is going to be an off game for the Riders. It's not going to be a whoa. Hamilton, if they're going to go out there and win one for the Gipper here, and do something for Pigskin Pete, this might be the rally call that they need to get their Schmidt together. And it might be. It might just be what they needed. It just might be what they need to pull this all together and get back on track. It's going to be a very close game. I don't think it's going to be – the Riders aren't going to walk away from this one. I'm pulling for Hamilton on it.
Well, fair enough. Michael Townsend, Hamilton, Saskatchewan, Ian Hamilton, Grey Cup rematch, second version. First didn't go that well.
Like this.
like Menashe said, Tino Smith is going to have a good game. And the thing about this is, this offense, he's not going to have to try to throw the big 40, 50-yard bomb. Tino is going to slice him up, man, 10, 20 yards a pass. He's not going to have to go for the long bomb. They're going to concentrate on the run, and that's when he's going to stick it right down his throats. So I'm not saying Saskatchewan is going to blow him out because Zach Claris is going to come in, and he's going to do his thing. But
he had a great game last time he was in Saskatchewan.
He had a very good game.
Against Saskatchewan, but I should say.
I don't think it's going to be enough, and I agree. Riders are not going to skip a beat. And like I said, Tino is going to carve him up piece by piece. 10, 20-yard pass here, 15-yard pass here. He don't have to go for the deep ball. Ain't no need. Why?
And it's my understanding that Sinceri is much like Darian Durant. They're the same kind of quarterback. So it's not like the team has to change the game plan in any way. And
with their
run game, they can afford to be patient and, as you said, pick Hamilton apart. And that's really going to be the question. Can Hamilton stop Saskatchewan's run game? Because ultimately that's where the game's going to be out of control for Hamilton. If it becomes a trench war, they're in deep trouble.
They're very deep trouble.
Yeah, if it becomes a trench war.
Yeah, and to touch on basis about Keith Price, y'all guys need to watch his film, man. Guy's good. I agree.
Oh, very
that's
good.
The quarterback right there. That's the future quarterback for the Riders right there. Guy that can pass and run and scramble. Oh, man, come on now. Can't wait to see him.
There you go. Well, you won't get a chance for a while, apparently, because he's just a little seedling right now. How about you, Menashe? Mm-hmm.
You already asked me. I think it's Chris that's next.
Yeah, Chris, go ahead. Well, actually, Chris asked you. Yeah, we've done all the games. So there's a few. There's a couple of subjects I want to talk about, and the first thing I'd like to talk about and get your opinions, guys. It sounds to me like it's a saw-off, but we'll start at the top of the page, and a good way to start is with Kelly. Who's going to miss their quarterback, their number one quarterback, more? Saskatchewan or BC, and why? Starting with you, Kelly.
This is a tough question because I haven't really thought about it a whole lot because I don't really want to think about it at this point until I see what we have. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of it's kind of like raising on the turn without having looked at your cards. So I'm not going to do that. But let's throw Edmonton into the mix because, you know, Riley's out, and I'm going to say Edmonton Eskimos.
Who's second?
Probably BC. I mean, like, I have to have faith in my coaching staff and my GM and understand that they've brought in guys that will step in there and do the job. And I'm maybe not as hyped as some about Sinceri, but I think he's more than adequate. I'm going to stick on my Glenn statement. I think he's a serviceable guy. He'll get you maybe 500. But not much more, and we all know he's, comes up short in the playoffs, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you, Doug?
Well, I kind of look at it this way, and I hadn't even thought about Edmonton until he mentioned him, but I don't know how much Edmonton's backup has been in there. I think Nichols is his name. And I don't know how much Sinceri, I think he's the backup for Durant, has been in there. But Glenn has played a lot this year.
There you go.
So if you have to give an edge, I think that the team that's going to be missing their starter the least would have to be BC because Glenn has played this year and has played well for the most part, whereas the other two guys, Edmonton and Hamilton, I think it is, or whatever. Saskatchewan. Thank you. Saskatchewan. neither one of those backups has seen significant time this year. So I guess if I had to choose, I would think Saskatchewan's probably going to notice it the most, just very slightly over Edmonton. But and I would have to pick BC as being the team that's going to notice the quarterback change the least.
How about you, Manasse?
No, I think it's going to be BC the most, just because I thought for them they may have been like a goal, like a motivating thing, had knowing that Lule was supposed to come back and he was going to be the guy to turn it around. And now that he's not, I think they know they can only go so far with Glenn. I think they're the one that's going to hit him the most in the long run. The Riders, it's not even going to be a factor, guys. Durant was not doing a thing the whole year. The guy was averaging like 185 yards, barely throwing the ball, rarely threw it past 20 yards down the field. It's just, it's going to be, you're going to look at the same team. They're not even going to feel like a different team. They're not going to skip a beat. It's going to be the same deal. So I have to say BC by far.
Okay, fair enough. How about you, Christopher?
Well, I think Saskatchewan's success is not from the pivot position. It's from the overall stability of the team. And I think you could put just about any quarterback in there, and Saskatchewan is going to have the success that they've been having. So I really don't think Saskatchewan is going to miss a beat with Tino coming in there. I think they're just going to keep playing. It might take a game or two to adjust to his style or to his play or to him to get to know the timing of everything else. But I think he is going to take the Riders as far as the Riders need to go, or as far as they're going to go. Kevin Glenn is he's serviceable. Better than mediocre, but he's a serviceable quarterback. He's got us at 600 football right now, and that will continue. Is it going to be enough to grab the fourth place from Winnipeg? I think so. I would be happy with a crossover. So BC is not going to miss a beat putting Kevin Glenn back in. They're going to be exactly the same as they were for the first nine games of this season.
I think they'll be better because you'll know the team that much more, to be honest with you, Chris.
Of course. I mean, he's going to be better than the first four games. They were pathetic.
Right.
But, you know, and I think the team that's missing their quarterback the most is Edmonton. And Kelly hit that one bang on. So
Well, that was a given. But I was the reason I asked the question the way I did was because they were the two recent ones. I think it's been established already that Edmonton's not having. Listen, Nichols is a great quarterback, but maybe he isn't a Riley. I mean, we're beginning to learn that he's not quite a Riley.
I mean,
he's not a, you know.
There's people out there that still think Nichols is the better quarterback, that he won it coming out of training camp last year, and he should have been the quarterback, and Riley got it by default. And I go, no, Riley's the better quarterback. And Riley's not gone for the rest of the year. He may be playing this week. We don't know yet, do we?
Right. Right. It's
a not
thumb
a terminal
thing.
Injury.
It's,
it's not sustainable. We don't know what it is.
Yeah. Well, it's about him being able to grip the ball. It comes down to he can't grip the ball. And if he can't grip the ball,
he can't
be a quarter. He can't throw it.
No,
so
no,
you know,
I understand
until
that,
he's satisfied with the ability to grip
it. You don't know how bad it is. Chris Jones doesn't talk to the media the best of times, right? Never mind when his quarterback is not quite there. So, they're going to miss him the most, without question. But I think that he may be back next game or the game after, where we both know Lule and Durant are gone for the season.
Right.
So they're going to be different.
They're done. Well, the good
they're
news
done.
For Saskatchewan, the good news for Saskatchewan. Well, let me go with Mike first, and then I'll give my opinion. Mike, how about you?
Well, no, I agree with a couple of guys, man. The least team that's worried about the quarterback going down is Saskatchewan. My thing is, I'm kind of worried about BC, the quarterback situation, because I know Lule's going down and we got Glenn being serviceable. But we all know, and I love Glenn, but we all know if Glenn take a big hit, we already know what's going to happen. And then who you have coming in as a backup to take Glenn's spot. You know, that's where BC Beck is going to miss their quarterback the most. Because if you think, who you say, John Beck? Okay, yeah, right. it won't happen, man. You know what I'm saying? BC is going to miss their quarterback the most. And I just hope that Glenn doesn't take that big hit, man, and hit the turf real hard where Beck's got to come in. I mean, Beck shows flashes, but he always showed flashes when he was in the NFL, but never could complete the job. So, you know, I'm going to BC number one. Riders, they're not going to skip a beat, man. They're not going to mess it up. I mean, hey. And Edmonton, Mike Riley, man. You know what I'm saying? So that's how I feel about it. Until Riley gets better, Edmonton and BC are the ones who miss their quarterbacks the most.
There you go. Okay. I'm inclined to agree with you guys. My specific reasons are this, is that the supporting cast in Saskatchewan is far superior to the one in BC. Over the season, at least, we've seen a more consistent game being played by those other than at the quarterback position in Saskatchewan. Edmonton has been more consistent as far as that's concerned, more consistent than BC. But I happen to think that Riley, the more we see the Riley-less Edmonton Eskimos, the more we see a little more desperation and a little more relief when something good happens when they're on offense. I'm talking about Edmonton. Whereas with Riley, it's expected, and maybe that's what I didn't see to begin with. I thought of Nichols the way I understood it 2 years ago when they came out of camp. Nichols was far better in practice, far better in exhibition. But I think Riley has proven that he's a gamer. And when the game matters, you can count on him. And, you know, he almost wills the team to win. And he has the respect of the players, not that Nichols doesn't. But Riley gives everything he's got. And that's why they'll miss him. He is, as much as he is a great quarterback and their number one quarterback, he's an emotional leader for that team as well, I think, you know, especially on offense. Defense, you've got Chris Jones. It's a Chris Jones defense. It's just, they're just angry and ready to go every 3 seconds, you know. So, yeah, I'm inclined to agree. BC, I like Glenn. I happen to think that Glenn still has a playoff hunt in his future. That fourth place finish is going to come down to which is the better quarterback, Willie or Glenn. I believe that's how it's going to shake out. Willie had a great start to his season. He's had some incredibly great last-second touchdowns and offensive plays that brought his team from death's door. But unfortunately, he hasn't been the kind of quarterback that's been a consistent – well, he hasn't been consistent, and he hasn't been able to overcome really good defenses. That's what we've seen. That's simple. So basically, Riley, I think, is the most missed. I agree. He wasn't the question I was asking. So as far as the question that I was asking is concerned, I think BC will miss their number one quarterback more than Saskatchewan because I think the parts are much stronger than, you know, the singular part, which is the quarterback. And that's why that's the case. The next subject I'd like to talk, without getting into conspiracies, every week we talk about officiating, and every week we talk about, especially when Manasseh's on, how the officials have massaged the game into a conclusion that's more conducive to what they want. This past weekend, I really think it probably was the worst officiating of the season, in my opinion. I do try to watch as many of the games as I can. I usually watch all four, even one case, five in a week. And I'm very disappointed, especially in the challenges. That's where you don't expect the wrong call to be made when it's challenged and they get a chance to watch the play over and over again. And I saw too much of that this weekend. I'm very concerned with the inconsistency of the officiating. Is it because in Winnipeg the coach talks too much to the referees? Is it because in Hamilton the same thing is true, where there's a lot of baiting of the officials going on? And is that what's getting these teams bad calls, even on the rewind, if you will? I'm inclined to say yes. I think, you know, it's time for Winnipeg to talk to their coach and say, dude, leave the referees alone. Stop talking to them. Talk to them when it really matters, and that's it. Don't have an ongoing conversation with them, because you may be very easily drawing some bad calls because of it. And we all have seen the frustration that the Hamilton head coach has displayed. Yeah, it's going to tick some referees off. And I happen to think that it's more about that than it is inconsistent officiating. I think we were – well, I'll take a gamble. We'll start at Kelly this time. Kelly?
Yep. Yeah. You know, has Kent Austin ever been more mad? Have you ever seen this guy more angry than he is right now? Like,
well, I
thought
I saw that last year, and it seems every week he finds a new level of discontent.
Yeah, for sure. You thought it was, you know, at a new height last year. Well, it's continued and then some, like you're saying. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. Going back to the Dressler holding is still on a lot of people's minds on the Dressler return there. Number 85, Saskatchewan receiver. Can't even remember his name off the top of my head. But one of the – oh, it's Pershalski. Pershalski.
Okay.
Yeah, he had that phantom holding call. Well, one thing I want to educate everybody on is and you guys all know this, so I'm being a little bit facetious here, but – there's holding on every single CFL play, every single CFL play. So, you know, sometimes it gets called, sometimes it doesn't.
But there's a threshold. There should be a consistent threshold. There should be a threshold that's consistent, though. That's the part that bothers me. You know, especially a hold that leads to a touchdown.
It didn't lead to a touchdown, Frank. You don't know about the physics on the field and you know, how close the guy was to him and whether he would have made the tackle. There's just too many what-ifs, man. Like, what if Dressler would have juked him or, you know, there's just too many what-ifs. Like, it was a sure tackle otherwise. Like, that's the assumption you're making there, and that's just not the case.
The same way an official has to make a call with a catchable ball. You know, they do make value judgments on what's catchable.
It's moot when you're talking about
holding. Well, it
sure looked
like he had a play on...
you know, it just happens way too often to get upset about, like... That's what I'm saying.
I'm not upset about it at all.
No, I know.
But you must admit one thing. It was denied on the replay. They had a chance, and there was nothing that wasn't a hold on that play that needed to be called. There was nothing. That's my point. It's not that there isn't holding on every play, but when the question is asked, you know, it's like, you know, everybody at some point speeds, but once you actually speed and get caught, you don't get to say, well, you know, you didn't catch me yesterday. How dare you consider that you can catch me today? That's the point. But the point is, at a critical time, you do something under the watchful eye, and then someone's asked to adjudicate, and you adjudicate wrongly? How do you do that?
No,
that's all I'm asking.
It's not wrong. It's not wrongly. You said it before yourself. It's a judgment call, and what they judged, that man in the booth that it goes to judged, is that it didn't affect the play. It did not affect the play, and that's why they didn't have to go back and change their call.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. And again, there's always that wonderful thing where they say there has to be indisputable, you know, evidence to overturn a call. So
totally.
Yeah, no, I get that. I get that. Hey, listen, I'm not that open-minded, but I'm not that closed-minded either. How about you, Douglas?
Well, what I find kind of funny
is that not only, you know, are people complaining about the officiating in the NFL, but, you know, now they're complaining about it in the CFL. And I think it's equally horrible in both leagues. Like I said, I had both leagues. I had both their games on at the same time on Sunday, so I was kind of, you know, I could see what was going on in both leagues, and it was struck me as funny, you know, like I said, that, you know, there's all these new rules in the NFL this year with the, you know, after you can't touch them after 5 yards and all this other stuff, and I don't know what new rules they may have put in with in the CFL, but what bothers me is that, you know, maybe you'll see a little bit of an improvement in one game, and then they go right back to being terrible the next. You know, if you're consistency.
The definition of inconsistent.
Sure, yeah. That's the thing. That's the thing. If you're going to be, make up your mind. Are you going to be consistently bad, or are you going to be consistently good? Pick one and then stick with it. At least that way we know what we're dealing with. You know, I mean, for years the officiating in the NFL to me has not been the best. And, you know, now they're doing that thing now where not only is there somebody up in the booth that's looking at the play, but they have a command center in New York that's looking at it as well, kind of like what the NHL does when there's a goal dispute. So maybe that will improve things. I don't know if the CFL does that, and if they don't, maybe they should think about instituting something like that as well. Maybe that would help, you know, make it so that the calls are more consistently called correctly. I mean, it wouldn't hurt.
Well, that's where the NFL got their idea from. The CFL's had that for about 5 years now.
Oh, have they? Okay, well, I stand corrected. I wasn't aware of that. That's why, it may, like you said, it seems to be working, and it's gotten a little better, you know, with the NFL. I mean, they had nowhere to go but up as far as I'm concerned with your officiating. So it's gotten a little bit better. They have a long way to go, in my opinion, you know. But come on, half the fun of watching.
They really haven't improved. I mean, the worst that they were was when they had the replacement officials.
Oh, absolutely.
They got a raise.
Everybody remembers that Monday night game. What was it,
oh
last year?
Gosh,
Seattle and Green Bay? I mean,
absolutely.
But
the Hail Mary that was full of grace.
Yeah, but there's one other thing that I think I find really amusing, too. It wouldn't be as much fun, though, really, if we couldn't complain about the refereeing. Isn't that part of the fun?
It is for me. I don't want to know I love this saying, and it comes from hockey, is when do you know a game's been reffed really well? When you don't notice the referees, you know? I begin to notice them too much, and that's when I start getting concerned, because I start to wonder, now, is this game about the players, or is it about the officials? When it starts to look like it's about the officials, I start getting a little irritated. You know, it's about the quarterback, the running back, the receiver, the defender. It's not about... should that have been a holding call or not? Like you know, we just had our debate, you know, I had with Kelly. It should be about, was that a great pass or not? And sometimes it seems to me when the officiating gets bad enough that you start to feel their presence, that's when it gets frustrating for me. How about you, Manasse?
Yeah, to what Kelly was saying, first of all, in that play, it was bad because the Winnipeg defender, Pontebrand, had Dressler because he had the sideline. The reason that holding call was bad was it allowed Dressler to turn up and get the angle and go upfield.
Right.
Because if that holding wasn't there, he would have been pinned against the out of bounds, and he wouldn't have been able to get the angle. And what infuriated the Winnipeg fans was the next possession, when Winnipeg gets the ball back, they call holding twice in a row. The very next two plays. And it was just like totally rubbing in their face. And the reason is, from Kelly's perspective, and I get it from the Rider fans, I was rooting for the team. I know their history. And if you watch, the Riders get away with offensive holding more than any other team. It's been, you can talk to anybody who works in the CFL, any exec, any person, anyone who knows about personnel, they'll tell
you
that. Because the reason is the Riders have a certain favoritism that no other team gets. And I'm sorry to say it, guys. You can call me crazy if you want to, but it's the truth. The Riders made $13 million in profit last year. That's more than the rest of the league put together. They generate over 1 million people in ratings for their games, especially after September. The CFL knows these guys are their cash cow. In 2011, when the Riders had that down year after going to the Grey Cup 2 years in a row, the ratings just dropped like a rock. corporate sponsors were backing out. The CFL was panicking. Since then, notice how the Riders have been a playoff team again, and they're going to stay one for the foreseeable future because the CFL can't afford to have a bad Rider team. It kills the league. And, you know, I know from Kelly's perspective it's hard to see, but I understand.
And that's
other
why
fans,
they get offensive holding calls.
That's how they get away with it. Let's not kid ourselves.
That's what irritated me. I am not a supporter of Winnipeg. I am not a supporter of Saskatchewan either. But I am a supporter of the CFL, and I found that very degrading. The way that turned out, especially in Winnipeg, you know, and that's just salt in the wound, you know, it happening in Winnipeg. And to hear the crowd in unison yelling, "The ref sucks, the ref sucks," and hearing that.
And they did
deserve it. The refereeing was shoddy for that couple of minutes at least. And like I said, you know, Manasseh, I'm not talking about a totally botched game. What I'm talking about is when it gets to the point where you notice the officials, you're not noticing the game anymore. And now the game takes a back seat to the officials. And I despise that more than anything when it comes to sports. I don't want
it by design that they're doing that. They're increasing their calls so that we become less and less aware of their influence on the game. If they were calling the games, you know, rarely or, you know, sporadically, and it'd be a lot more noticeable when they make a key call late in the game, which switches the momentum. But when they're making, you know, tons of calls and a lot of iffy calls, it's not as noticeable when they make their little subtle moves in the second half. That's when the game is decided in the third and fourth quarter.
I mean, if referees were fixing games,
where I was sitting, you could see, I'm telling you, in my section, we all looked at the Riders' offensive line the whole game, and they consistently had holding, I mean blatant holding, where they're like tugging on a guy's jersey, the guy's got his arms up trying to get away, and the guy's yanking his shoulder pads. I mean, we could see it, and we were on, like, 25-yard line
I'm okay with not calling those hold. You're talking about the holding when you're facing the player. Supposedly, and I say supposedly because this is what I understand, holding is called when you're not facing the player. When he turns, and if you're holding him when he turns away from you, that's a holding penalty. When you're straight up and you've got both his shoulders in your hands and he's coming at you and you're holding both those shoulders square to your face, it's not holding. That's the way I've understood it and the way, you know, that's the difference between a hold. But that hold, you know, on Getzlaff's run back, you know, that was when the guy was heading towards Getzlaff and he had a hold of him and he basically stopped him from getting to Getzlaff. That, to me, is a hold. When you got a jersey in both hands or shoulder pads in both hands, that's okay as long as it's the front of the shoulder pads, not the back. And that's when it becomes an issue. How about you, Christopher?
The holding call is you can have a hold of their front of their chest, basically
right
around their breast area. But if you go out to the shoulders, then it's a hold.
Outside.
So even
outside
though they're standing face-to-face like you, and I grab you by the outside of your shoulders, that is a hold and should be called. Now, I'm going to bring something else up here that is not inconsistent with what you're talking about, but I don't believe Getzlaff has been onside on a snap yet this year. And how many times has he been called? Three? I mean, we counted 12 times he was offside in the BC Rider game, and not by a foot, by 2 yards. And
I guess
right
what you're
in
saying
front
is
of the official, and they're not calling the Riders against this. Yet if Manny was offside, Arsenal was offside by half a step, they were flagging him. So I agree 100% that the Riders are getting preferential treatment from the league and these officials, and it's because of money. Manasseh is bang on. He's hit the nail on the head with this one.
So what you're suggesting then is that Getzlaff has spent too much time in the NFL and forgot how to waggle.
I don't think Getzlaff's ever been onside before he went to the NFL.
Well, you know, I'd like to think that that isn't true, but unfortunately, you know, I asked this question, and I guess, well, I get it, and now I'd like to ask everybody, what is missing? Yeah, we are. Real quick, what's missing from the officiating that could help make it less noticeable, less a factor in the game? We have already heard, if all the teams made the same amount of money, profit, then that would solve the problem, because then there wouldn't be a reason to – so let's skip that part. But what – is there anything else that could help the officiating, Christopher?
What if we traded officials with the NFL? We took their officials and we gave them ours, and then they would be completely non-biased because they wouldn't be associated with any team.
Okay, so you feel that there's too much of an association because it isn't these referees aren't professional in the real sense of the word. And if I say that, I apologize. By that I mean they're not independent. Like they can't, just like some of the football players, they can't rely on their CFL paychecks to make ends meet. They need to supplement their income. And is it because they need supplemental income that they become part of the community and that's the problem?
No. I think it's the fact that the football community in Canada is so small, and if you get to the point where you're a CFL referee, you've been in football your entire life, and you have been following the CFL, and you have come from a geographical area of this country that you support one or two particular teams. Now, that's just giving
and
straight
bias. And that's too hard to overcome. And that's too hard
for individuals
to overcome. Okay, Mike, what do you think? What are your thoughts on the officiating?
He's gone.
He's here, but he's got it muted. Kelly, I guess, are you going to at least buy into the fact that there is some inconsistency in the officiating, and is there a solution, a resolution to that?
Nope. I don't think there's a resolution to human error. I mean, you're always going to have it, and this league's 102 years old coming up on, and, you know, guys, it's just something we have to live with. You know, I don't think these people are out to get anybody, but I do agree with the statements about Saskatchewan getting preferential treatment and why.
It can't be human error then.
Well,
right. It can't be human error if they're getting preferential treatment.
Well, it is what it is, I guess. But you know,
it's great. Admit it, Kelly. You
it.
Love it. It's nothing to be ashamed about, man. To be proud of it.
Sure.
Your team is running the league. That's great.
Yeah, it is. You know, if we have a little bit more time, if everybody has their turn, Manasseh, I'd like you to repeat what you said on the two Saskatchewan talk shows, if you can.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Are we going overtime, Frank, or you got to, because time's about to be up?
Yeah, no, just go with your thing. Hopefully we'll have enough time to hear what you have to say. What did you say on the
Basically, I told them I'm just going to describe a team for them and then let them – basically, you guys can tell me who I'm describing here. If I said I had a team that had a game-managing quarterback, a team that had a strong run-blocking offensive line, that their offense was built around the running game, they had a strong pass-rushing defensive line, a mediocre linebacking core, and a ball-hawking secondary, and they happen to be the defending champs of their league, who am I describing?
Seattle Seahawks.
The Seattle Seahawks.
Right, everyone thought Seattle, but who I was describing was the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And that's the template that Brandon Taman and his genius completely copied, and he's applied to the Riders. And that's why, regardless of if it's Durant, Sunseri, Keith Price, or any one of us, that team is going to be successful regardless of who's the quarterback, because they have a system in place and they just need the quarterback to be a game manager. He doesn't need to throw for 250 yards or more. He just needs 150 yards, maybe one TD, no picks. You know, just make sure you hand the ball off when it's necessary, and that's all. They're going to keep plugging along. They're not going to have any issues. That's it. And especially when they know they're going to get away with offensive holding, there's no on top of the fact that their offensive line is that talented, that's it, man. There's no one in the league is going to stop them. Come playoff time in November, whether they have to play in Calgary or Edmonton, it's going to be cold, windy, and possibly snowing.
How do you win in those elements? Run the ball and play high-level defense. The Riders got it. No one's going to stand in front of this team in the playoffs. They're going to run the table.
Okay, that was perfect timing. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Mike, do you want to say goodnight or what? Well, I guess Mike has left the building. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you later. This has been Candid Frank. The CFL is the greatest football, the best football in the world. And thanks for tuning in Monday and Wednesday. CFL Talk, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.